Hell yeah.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Detail the best gaming podcast in the world.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another Gaming Guru podcast with myself, the Gareth Woods, and of course Tim Lester, as we are approaching the gaming Christmas time almost. It feels like it's the happiest time of the year. It's a launch of a brand new set of consoles. Obviously, November 10th, we see the Xbox Series X and S land worldwide. And I think PlayStation in those like first world regions, I think it's Europe and America. And then a week later, here in South Africa, we get our hands on our PlayStation 5s finally. Did you manage to pre-order? Are you going to hold out a little bit?
Me, I'm going to hold out, man. Like, I feel like the price is going to come down a bit next year. I also think like a lot of the new titles that are kind of slated for Q4 and like Q1 of 2021 are also going to be cross-play on PS4. I don't know if I'm in a position right now to like upgrade. It's definitely on the horizon, but it's a wait and see for me.
100%. Yeah, I managed to secure a pre-order on a PlayStation 5. I went with the disced version. I was hoping for discless, but when I saw how few there were in the country, I decided not to risk missing out entirely. And then the irony, of course, is because my wife and I decided to move to Cape Town, it lands the day that I move. And so now I've had to move my pre-order to Cape Town, and they're going, yeah, but it's already allocated stock in Joburg, so it's not drawing from Cape Town. It'll have to get shipped from Joburg. So it's going to be like a 5-day delay. So
they'll have to carry it out on a velvet laced pillow deliver it with the hands of angels to your new place in the Cape.
Yeah, 100%. Although at 12 grand, I expect no less. Then we kind of got messed up with the not only exchange rate but the taxes and all that. But we're not really going to focus on the consoles themselves in this podcast. I think as we get close to the time, we want to chat about, I suppose, the financing of it. You know, when is the right time to sell your old console? Should you at all? You know, all these kind of upgrade questions, and maybe give our insights there. What we really want to focus is, I guess, the posturing and the positioning of both Sony and Microsoft. And I think particularly with Microsoft, with what was quite big news towards the end of September and kind of the dust has settled now, so we have a chance to talk about it, which was the acquisition of Bethesda, or ZeniMax as its kind of parent company, by Microsoft. For those of you who don't know, Tim has hit the books, done a bit of research and some sleuthing to get you some inside information. And so, Tim, maybe you want to take us through maybe a little bit of info on, you know, what happened, who is ZeniMax to begin with, and kind of how does this fit into potentially a narrative of the future of corporate kind of studio buyouts?
Yeah, so this is one of the biggest, it's the second largest video game acquisition in history, I believe. Worked out to about like $7.5 billion. Pretty beefy one. The number of IPs that Microsoft has managed to get their hands on is sort of something akin to the Disney takeover of Fox that happened around a year and a half, 2 years ago. Just kind of off the cuff, a few of those top names include like Doom, Elder Scrolls, Wolfenstein, Fallout, Dishonored, Prey. So a lot of well-loved games that, you know, are in the hearts and minds of many players are now shifting homes away from Bethesda to Microsoft, and that might have huge ramifications on the gaming landscape for next generation.
Yeah, I mean, like as you mentioned, those are certainly really big games, and I think I read somewhere that price tag of like $7.5 billion was pretty much close to Sony's operating profit over the last like 5 years or something.
crazy.
So yeah, I mean, we're playing in a kind of ballpark that, you know, Sony doesn't have nosebleed seats to even attend, let alone play in. You know, it's really just Microsoft flexing its muscles and I guess reminding the world that, like, it's what I think the second or third biggest company on the planet for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it has that kind of money. Other things that people forget are in there. It's like they own Skype. They own, you know what I mean? It's like really big acquisitions that Microsoft have done in the past. I mean, a lot of people have said that, you know, Bill Gates got rich, you know, creating Windows and all that, but actually, you know, made his billions in the acquisition of other smaller companies.
Yeah.
That's where the Microsoft really kind of exploded. And so do you happen to know who the biggest acquisition is? You said this was the second.
Second. Oh man, caught me off guard there, bro. Okay. Definitely a note I should have had. I should have hung on to. No, I don't.
Okay, cool. No, I'd be interested to know what the biggest is, because obviously with those big names in there, I'm struggling to think of another studio who owns, you know, I mean, the studios that spring to mind are like something like an EA or an Ubisoft that also has 7 or 8 really, really big kind of studios underneath them. So I guess the question then for the uninitiated and I suppose for myself as well, who's ZeniMax? I mean, do you have any background there?
Yeah, so ZeniMax Media are the parent company of Bethesda. So Microsoft acquired ZeniMax Media, and in doing so, they acquired their subsidiaries, Bethesda included. ZeniMax has a bit of a bad rep in the gaming world, particularly with smaller indie developers, just for their, I would say, they got a tendency to kind of like use their size, position, and weight to lean on smaller developers and, you know, to come out on top and kind of get that advantage. You know, let's say a couple of kind of the known mini legal tangles that they've managed to get themselves into in the last couple of years was, you know, weaponizing their corporate might and standing against these smaller developers. One of them were Mahjong, who was sued by ZeniMax Media for the use of the name Scrolls in a trademark dispute in 2012. And they had to then go and change that. In 2018, they went after Facebook regarding the theft of the video company's game code and info used in the development of Oculus products. They even filed a lawsuit against their own owners for various reasons. Yeah. They filed lawsuits against the original founders and developers of the Fallout series and the license holder Interplay. And then they also forced a company who butchered the name now. They created a game called Pray for the Gods, and they forced them to change the name from Prey, P-R-E-A, to Prey, P-R-A-E-Y. So it's a whole bunch of that. And I guess the biggest sort of, or at least the story that people might be most acquainted with would have been the buyout of Human Head Studios. So with this whole history of being aggressive towards smaller companies, ZeniMax sort of forced a buyout of the original developer of Prey, Human Head. They bankrupt that company through a series of moves, like pushing, like, you know, moving the goalpost back and forth, creating ridiculous deadlines for them to meet for the development of Prey 2. They even talked down the quality of Prey 2 in various pieces in the media, saying the game was terrible before it was even released. And this is a game that they were financing.
Yeah.
So once they, you know, sort of backed Human Head into a corner, they didn't really have much option other than to, you know, sign on with Bethesda. Very quickly after that, the company was shut down, and the Bethesda eventually published Prey. They stopped Prey 2. They published Prey by Arkane Studios, which was acquired in another hostile takeover. So, yeah, so it looks like ZeniMax.
Probably see a pattern.
the company with the pattern of these aggressive, vicious, hostile takeovers of smaller video video game developers, cannibalizing them, buying them out, shutting them down. It's a story that we've heard over and over again from the likes of people like EA. And it's sort of, one could say, ironic that they're the ones who are now getting bought out. So I guess if I had to kind of close this one out, it would be, you know, now that ZeniMax is a subsidiary and not, you know, its own entity, it's a subsidiary now of Microsoft, will its parent company, now Microsoft, be, will they be able to influence that company culture? Will we see kind of, will we see better behavior in the corporate space when it comes to the way they treat other developers? Who knows? All we know is that ZeniMax was kind of shit, but yeah.
I'm going to hesitate and say no. I mean, if a company whose culture is that of acquiring smaller companies is then bought out by a bigger company who also has a history of buying out smaller companies, I don't see anything changing in that way. But I think let's talk, for example, now, what does that mean, first of all, for Microsoft? Okay, so that they own ZeniMax, but and with that means they own, you know, the rights to some of these games. But I mean, with a lot of those IPs, you've got certain issues. Like, I mean, the immediate one that stands to mind is with Deathloop. That was going to be a PlayStation exclusive, but now it's owned and it's been developed by Arkane Studios, which is part of ZeniMax, which has been bought out now. So do you know if that's going to affect that? How does it potentially affect other exclusives?
Yeah, so from what I discovered in my research was kind of right when this story went public, there were obviously a lot of questions. This was definitely one of them that was being directed at Xbox, directed at Phil Spencer, at Microsoft. You know, what's going on? What's happening? Particularly because, you know, we just had this PS5 showcase that showed a bunch of these PS5 exclusives, including Deathloop, coming out of Arkane Studios. And Phil Spencer says that they are committed to basically sticking to the promises that had already been made. So if the game said that it was going to be PS5 exclusive and you were like betting your money on that because that's something you're looking forward to, they're not going back on any of those decisions that were made kind of, you know, prior to the acquisition.
Okay.
But anything else that hasn't been announced yet, like that hasn't been spoken about yet, you know, Star Citizen, those are all up for discussion.
Okay. So it's a kind of a case-by-case basis for each game that's coming out now. So then I guess the question is, let's think of the different parties kind of at play here, who the big winners, losers, you know, potential risks are. How do you think this affects Bethesda themselves? So, I mean, for example, their ability to keep producing high quality games, you know, does this make things harder or easier? What are the pros and cons you think of you know, being bought out by, you're already a big studio, but now being bought out by an absolute mammoth in Xbox or Microsoft?
Well, so I've given a bit of thought to this and I don't know if I've come to like, to a great answer, because on one hand, you know, my initial gut reaction is like, oh, thank God, there's going to be a bit of oversight now. You know, maybe Bethesda won't be, you know, forcing these terribly unfinished games down our throats, right?
Style. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and you know, Todd Howard won't have to, like, you know, talk through that, like, lie through that white, shiny grin of his to thousands and thousands of people, you know, now that he has, like, a direct line manager. And we don't know what kind of quality controls they're going to integrate into kind of like the Bethesda culture and workflow process. You know, there might be this top-down restructuring of the studio. They might move move resources around. Like, we don't know kind of, you know, what that's going to look like. You know, if we, you know, because Bethesda had their own games that they published with their in-house team, but then they also had the games that were done by a couple of the other studios that they owned. Yeah. So when it came to Bethesda games, I was, you know, more keen on, let's say, things coming out of the They own Idios, right? Idos.
I don't know. Do they own Idos?
Doom. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm thinking of Doom. You know, I was more keen for like a Doom or a Prey, you know, coming out of Arkane Studios than I am to actually play, you know, Fallout 5 or the next Fallout 70, you know,
yeah,
jump into 76 at all, because I don't trust that side of their development. I trust the development that they don't have oversight over.
A quick Google says that no, they don't. It's still part of Square Enix.
Gotcha, gotcha.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm more excited about id Games, for example, than I am, you know, some of the kind of smaller studios. I like the Arkane Studios one, for example.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? So those other games that are currently under development, you know, with Bethesda's in-house team on their in-house engine, I forget what the name of that engine is that's been running all these games, is kind of showing the cracks of what their engine can do on current gen. I wonder if those titles will be moved around to maybe one of Microsoft's other studios that just is...
Yeah, the engine is id Tech 7.
Exactly. So, you know, we might even see, like, I guess Star Citizen is like years in development now, but let's say a Fallout 7, like a Fallout 5, for instance.
Yeah.
We could look forward to a Fallout 5 being made by like Arkane, for instance. You know, these are things that Microsoft can now do. They can shift these resources around and move these titles around. You know, we might see, you know, the next, you know, Star Citizen game coming from like a totally different studio, you know? I don't know. So,
okay. So what is the risk then? What is the risk then that we see more of like just a buyout and a strip mining sort of approach where you go, okay, cool. Some of these studios are performing, some of them aren't. And we just, you know, you think of EA in the, I want to say the late 90s, early noughts, acquiring studios left, right, and center. And then I remember Bullfrog, who were the Syndicate series, and Dungeon Keeper, and you had Visceral Games, who was Dead Space, all got kind of absorbed and then just never produced the game again. Just kind of like bought them out, and then I don't know where the people went. It might have been that they all got cushy jobs in a bigger EA studio sort of setup, but like those smaller studios just disappeared. What is the risk here in your mind of this sort of thing happening?
So I feel like, you know, when we look at the history of these big corporate buyouts, that seems to be quite common. You know, after the buyouts, they'll probably go through a couple of months of restructuring and streamlining as they move resources around to kind of fit the top-down workflows that they have going on in the company. Some things might stay the same, some things might change. But with that, the development of certain titles might also change.
Yeah, I think that's the one risk always with these sort of corporate buyouts, as you go, Microsoft has a way of doing things, and that might be a headcount policy or whatever. And so now suddenly they, you know, see Bethesda's headcount in certain departments, and they're going, yeah, that's too many people, or that's redundant because your consumer engagement team, that work will be done by a Microsoft consumer engagement team. So that's like 100 people who lose their jobs or whatever. So that sort of stuff can impact morale, which can then impact, you know, performance of, you know, actually putting the games out. It might have the reverse effect. It might be a case of going, hey guys, now you're part of the Microsoft team and there's all sorts of perks and benefits that you didn't have with Bethesda. And so now you're, who knows, paid more or more leave or, you know, cushier deadline setups or whatever. Probably not, knowing, you know, the kind of machinery that Microsoft's running. But, you know, you're speculating either way. But it's interesting that an HR sort of impact there might be there.
So yeah, you know, like they might come to a decision like, well, we got a redundancy in QA testing. So we've got a much bigger QA testing studio at Microsoft. We can just integrate like your people into ours and bring all the QA this side. You know what I mean? So things like that could have a huge impact on the final product of the game that we get eventually.
Yeah, 100%. So now let's talk about us, the consumers. Is this a win? Is this a loss? Is it, you know, is it neither? What are your thoughts there?
So initially, I think people who've sort of always PS4 players and enjoy having their Bethesda game on their Bethesda games on their PS4, like there's a sense of loss there. You know, there's a sense of, I don't know if my favorite Bethesda games are going to be on my platform in the future. So it's this uncertainty and unsurety. But I think it's a win for consumers in general, because I think the competition is just better this time around.
Okay.
I feel like when it came to the previous console generation, there were a lot of things that Microsoft... I felt like Microsoft was losing focus. They didn't have their eye on the ball in a couple of various places. And this is one step in sort of making the platform and kind of what Xbox is bringing to the next console generation. It just makes their fight sort of that much stronger, puts them at more of an even playing field with PlayStation, for instance.
Yeah, 100%. I think we've talked about before how, you know, it feels like objectively Microsoft lost this current generation of the console war. You know, if you had to look back and go, you know, almost chapter by chapter, I feel like they were on an even keel, if not won, the Xbox 360 generation. But I definitely feel like the Xbox One lost out to the PlayStation 4. And, you know, on my very humble, mildly expert opinion, I think a lot of that was a loss of focus on games. It felt like, yeah, for me, that they saw where their interpretation of where the Xbox 360 was going into the next generation of Xbox One was that the console was going to be the hub of the home entertainment system. And I think with the just absolute meteoric both popularity and power and app development for phones, the phone has actually become the center. People, yeah, are running their smart TVs, all their smart fridges, their everything, their wearables from their cell phones, from what music they're listening to what they're streaming. And so the console has had to become a specialist to stay relevant. And exactly, so the, yeah, and so I think where PlayStation won the last generation or current generation was just their absolute focus on games. When I think when Xbox was doing all that, like talking about non-compatibility, PlayStation was going, no, totally backwards compatible, share discs with your friends, we don't care. It was all just about, this was the machine to play games on. And I think then Xbox tried to pivot later in the generation to go, you know, it was all about the power of the console. You know, this then became the best place to play games because the grip, yeah, you know, on a stats and figures point of view, like more frames, more polygons, more teraflops, all that sort of stuff. And I guess you used a great analogy when you're talking about this warfare, where you go like, cool, you can have the most powerful computer on the world, but if you've got nothing to play on it, it's just an expensive paperweight. And I, yeah, think that's unfortunately where Xbox started going, where it was just a case of going, the exclusives it was offering. I mean, let's think Xbox exclusives. You're going Gears of War.
Sea of Thieves?
Exactly. Sea of Thieves. You're going
Forza.
You're going Crackdown. You're going Halo. When you're comparing against like Ratchet and Clank, God of War, GT Sport, like all these
Spider-Man.
Much bigger. Yeah, you can't compete. Yeah. And I think that's where they started.
When you just said Halo, I'm like, there was a Halo game?
I don't even know, was it? I think there was a Halo game in this generation. But yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where like, they have not just been able to keep up because they haven't focused on it. And it feels like this move has been, all right, we need the best games. And so it's not like they went and actively based on that targeted Bethesda. I have a feeling it was one of those, you know, six of one and half a dozen the other. They're looking and Bethesda's probably open to a buyout and a whole bunch of kind of stars align. But yeah, it's a case
I have
going,
a bit this, of info
definitely
on,
going. Yeah.
So I have a bit of background info on like how this acquisition sort of came about.
Okay.
In an interview with Todd Howard and Phil Spencer, they were sort of chatting about it. And it turns out that they've actually had a really close working relationship for many years. They've had teams within Microsoft working with them to help optimize their games for various Microsoft platforms. So it was long-standing working relationship, trust as well between that. And so it made a lot of sense. Another side note is that most Bethesda employees only found out about the buyout the day the public found out. So it wasn't public knowledge within the company. It was kind of like you work up to the news and being like, oh, I guess I work for Microsoft now.
Yeah, you know?
But, you know, bringing it back to this console wars, one thing that stands out to me that wasn't actually, I guess it wasn't apparent at the beginning of sort of the current gen, right, was the rise of Epic Games. And we haven't even, you know, like considered them to be a factor that sort of pushed Microsoft for the, to this buyout, because, you know, when Epic came on the scene, they made a really big point of being highly aggressive with getting exclusives fast, even though they're just, you know, they don't have their own console, they don't have a platform. They're sharing a platform with Microsoft in that your Epic games are running on your PlayStation. You know, it's multi-platform, right? Or on your PC. So they're, you know, they seem to be like losing market share in the PC space as well. As Epic starts to rack up all these exclusives, you're losing market share there to Steam as well. You need to, there needs to be pushback. And this acquisition of Bethesda seems to push back on a lot of those fronts.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm interested now. Obviously, speculation, you said that's a case-by-case basis, but I'm interested now to see how kind of Xbox plays out exclusive or potential exclusives. Because in my mind, I see three potential scenarios. The one is new game, so the new Doom comes out, and they go, it is a console exclusive, Xbox, you know, Series X, and maybe even your ones can play the new Doom. That is it, only available there in the same way a God of War was only available on PlayStation 4. You know, there's no PlayStation 3 version, no PC version, no Xbox version. Only way to play this game will be on an Xbox Series X. Scenario one. Scenario two is Xbox and through Games Pass, the ability to play on PC. So then obviously, like a lot of the Xbox games at the moment, if you have a PC, you don't have to have an Xbox, but you have a Game Pass, and so therefore you can play the games there. Scenario three is that it's available for everyone. Now, a lot of people might go, well, that's dumb. Why would Xbox even allow their games to be on PlayStations? And I think the key is that the console wars, I think, live in the hearts and minds of gamers more than it does in the hearts of corporates. Because for them, they're going, if there is an install base of, it's going to be way more, but let's say like 10 million PlayStation 5s, and you're going to go, no, I'm not going to offer this game to PlayStation players. You're saying goodbye to potentially 10 million units in sales. I mean, assuming every single person buys one. The other thing you've got to add to that is going, because PlayStation doesn't have a Games Pass option, those are all potential full price sales. They aren't people who try it on Game Pass, go, eh, it's not for me, and then decide not to. You know, we're not seeing specific revenue to that game. You're going, someone who buys this on PlayStation, you're spending the full $60 or 1,000 Rand or whatever to get this game, which in a weird way still might promote people buying consoles, Xbox consoles, because you're going, if you're a PlayStation 5 user and you're going, man, I'm getting sick and tired of spending all this money buying these Bethesda games on PlayStation when I could just be spending the 100 Rand and buying it on via Game Pass for my PC, or, you know, say I'm not a PC user, buy an Xbox, you know, whether I sell my PlayStation to get it or I just buy it as well, I think it's still going to sell consoles. So not only are you not missing out on that PlayStation group of people, you are not seen as the bad guy who's like holding these exclusives and not letting play. You could be seen as an absolute, like, we're just doing it for the love of gaming. Everyone can play, even PlayStation users. We're just trying to get more gamers. But then still make the money that PlayStation's bringing you, as well as like Game Pass and Xbox sales. I think it might be like a super like 200 IQ play to not like make it a console exclusive. What do you think?
Yeah, so one of the headlines that's sort of like circling around the story towards the end of last week and this week is people are speculating that Microsoft could possibly make back their investment of $7.5 billion in like just a handful of years if they made all these games exclusives.
Oh, really?
So if they were only exclusive to the Xbox platform, yeah, they'd make back their 7.5 bill quite quickly.
Now, I don't know enough about how the finances work, but how would I presume making a game exclusive obviously sells more on your platform than if it weren't exclusive. But surely games that are across multiple platforms sell more than exclusives, just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, perhaps, like there's...
By units, maybe not by cash made, because like buying on PC, obviously doesn't make as much money as buying on console. But if, in terms of units sold, surely the top titles are always like the Call of Duties, the FIFAs, the, you know, that are on multiple titles.
Yeah, I think definitely there, but I also think that having more exclusives means that they're probably selling more consoles as well. I think this will affect their console sales particularly, because then they can enter into, you know, the discussions of creating these deals where you'll you know, get an Xbox, you know, Series X with three Xbox exclusives or something, right? Like all those kind of, you know, game bundle deals are just going to make the package look more attractive to the buyer. And then also having the Game Pass on top of that. I mean, they can sell a console with like two exclusives and, you know, 3 months Game Pass or something. Like, okay, that is a huge deal. I'll do it. So they're factoring that into their market share and like revenue forecasts as well.
Yeah, fair enough. So then I guess my next question goes out is, are we seeing a potential, I won't maybe say chapter one, but new chapter in a kind of story of the console wars, which begins just the buyout years, you know, because it's been speculated before that the only thing that's been keeping consoles alive just in general has been exclusives. Like that is the only reason people are still buying consoles. If it weren't for the fact that the only way to play a Mario game is on a Nintendo console, like Nintendo would not sell consoles. If you could play them on PC, people would. If, you know, and the same can be said potentially, it'd be really interesting to know with games that are both that are on Game Pass on PC and on Xbox, where the numbers lie. Like are the numbers on PC or are the numbers on Xbox for games that are on both and landed on both at the same time? Because often there's a delayed launch, and then the fact that the numbers aren't as big on PC is more the fact that like the hype is gone. You know, people bought on Xbox because it was like day one launch, and then a month later they're like, yeah. Which I think we saw with Sea of Thieves, right? Did way more in the beginning, then people got tired of it, and then it came back on PC like, yeah, more people bought it or tried it for the first time. But I don't think the numbers were anywhere close to, you know, the original Xbox buy-in. And so I guess the question is, you know, do you think this is what is going to keep the consoles alive? Or is this, as a lot of people have also speculated, the last set of consoles as we move into an almost exclusively either PC or streamed generation?
Yeah, cloud space. So, I mean, like, I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's, you know, along with that comes brand loyalty. I think there's definitely a large percentage of the market who will just buy their PlayStation because that's how they prefer to play their games. You know, same can be said for Xbox players, for PC players. As the space of consoles becomes more sort of democratized and the walls between these platforms kind of come down, there's, you're definitely going to get some bleed from, you know, coming in from these various like sections of the market. I don't think that, let's see, I don't know if it's true that that consoles will, so, okay, let's see if I can reframe this. No, I think I lost.
I mean, what are your thoughts there? Well, like, what do you think? We're going to put you on the spot as some sort of futurist here. What does the gaming console space look like in 5 years? So towards the end of this generation and then in 10 years? What are your thoughts?
So the thing, okay, so in 10 years, I think, so here's the thing, right? If it's true that, if the statement that, you know, consoles only exists because of exclusives is true, then if we had to look forward to 10 years from now, how are developers or publishers, you know, taking into account that they still exist in 10 years' time, how are they keeping people within their own unique ecosystem, whether that's on a platform or in the cloud, they need to still have their own ecosystem. They'll still have their exclusives. So you'll still have your, let's say your PlayStation login for your account that you can maybe log in on your phone, for instance, and play your PlayStation games that you've bought that, you know, if you logged into your Game Pass on your phone, you wouldn't be able to play those games. So there'd still be a focus on keeping their market share within their own ecosystem, whichever that may be, whether it's a hardware ecosystem or a software cloud-based ecosystem.
I can see that happening. So in the same way as you've got like games that are only available on Steam or Epic Store or Origin.
Yeah, okay. I can't see them letting go of that, you know. Sure, there's a lot of, you know, case can be made for like the world sort of moving towards, you know, a paperless type vibe, right? Where like consoles are a thing of the past. But also these companies, they're distributors of product, you know, when it comes to selling physical products, it's a big part of their market share as well. So I could see, you know, in the next 5-6 years, them even trying to push like a sixth gen. Then, you know, we might see this next console generation last a bit longer because they can, you know, modify the hardware, may not need to put so much into developing a whole new system. But who knows? Like that, the next system might be a cloud-based that you just upgrade to that integrates into the system you currently have.
It's interesting you say that because the feeling I get is that the console life cycles are getting shorter and shorter. I mean, we know for a fact they are, in the sense that, you know, consoles were generally 5 to 8 years, limited overlap, and now there's a lot of overlap between, if you think even back to PlayStation 3 to 4 to 5, PlayStation 3, although not supported, is still definitely in circulation. And PlayStation 4, they're going to support it for a long time. So it's starting to feel almost like the consoles will exist at the same time in a way to almost combat how short the obsolescence is coming. I mean, we're already seeing that within life cycles, you're getting, you know, like a version 1.1, you know, on each of these consoles. We've seen Xbox bringing the One X, and then you got the PlayStation going the PlayStation 4 Pro. It's something we've seen in cell phones for a long time, where instead of the number kind of generations with like the Samsungs and the Apples is kind of the forefront of kind of modern phones, you're seeing like, you know, I think from about the iPhone 6, you're starting to see the iPhone 6S, you know, and then you were seeing like Samsung was bringing out the Galaxy, you know, 10E and all these sort of like subversions in between. And so you almost beg the question of going, are we reaching a point where those cycles are so fast that you get to the point where it's not becoming economically viable? Because you'll go, we're going to sell 20 million copies of this console over the space of 5 years before it gets kind of redundant or at least becomes obsolete. And so we have to look at the next one, but we can sell that amount of consoles in that time. And therefore the price point is 12,000 Rand. But if we're going for us to recoup our costs needs 20 million units, but we've only got 2 years to do it, then the price has to go higher. We've got to find other ways of funding it. And so it feels in a weird way that like, I can almost see the consoles starting to die and we go into the space like where PCs, where people aren't upgrading their PCs like iteratively. It's not like PC version 7, then PC version 8. There are new generations of chipsets and RAM and motherboards happening all the time. You know what I mean? Like I think we're in the 10th or 11th generation of Intel chipsets, but between that there are like the quad cores and the 6 cores and the 8 cores and all that. There are all sorts of so many subdivisions in between to tailor to budgets. And so people can make upgrades as their budgets kind of allow them, their budgets allow them to, as opposed to this, save up for 5 years, drop 12 grand, you know, be in the game for 5 years more. And so what I speculate is that Xbox knows that this is coming, that the real battle is going to be for software exclusivity. And they feel that their fight is actually not against Sony. Their fight is against Valve with Steam and against Epic with Epic Store and Origin. And we even see stuff like Ubisoft starting to like almost make their own like online store where you know, get rewards and buy their games at discounts. And I think that's where things are going because at the moment they know they have Game Pass. They know Sony doesn't. And so really it's just about, cool, let's make Game Pass the most attractive kind of subscription service. That's my feel.
So then they're competing in like a different space because it's, you know, they're not only eating into like Sony's market share, but then they're expanding into other areas, also future-proofing themselves by, you know, increasing their like real estate in terms of the IPs that they're hanging on to now.
100%. The one question though is, it does make you wonder as a consumer, if you have a PC, whether the best, if you want to play all the games and you have the money to do so, is actually not to own a PlayStation 5 and a PC, because you will get to play all the Xbox games, you get to play them on your PC, and you get to play all the PlayStation games. There will not be a single game. I mean, we're obviously counting Nintendo out of this particular equation, because I think the type of gamer that, you know, is, if Switch is your primary console, it's a different type of gamer. So I think we're trying to keep this a little bit binary in that sense. But it's like, if you are kind of the typical core gamer, you almost argue that you're better to go PlayStation 5 and PC. If you only get one console, you know, then it's more of a coin flip. And then the questions such as, which are the big IPs you want to play? You know, maybe you are a Gears of War Halo fan, and therefore PlayStation's not an option. Maybe you, most of your friends play on Xbox, and then PlayStation's not an option. Or the opposite. There might be PlayStation 5 exclusives you want on there, so that's what you want. But generally speaking, I think that would be the route I would go, is go get Game Pass on your PC and jam everything else on your PlayStation. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Game Pass looking hot right now, man. Like after it was looking good before the Bethesda buyout. Now it's looking really good, particularly because like, you know, a lot of the games that I've enjoyed, particularly this year, like I played Prey twice. I played New Game Plus. I played a bunch of Moon Crash. So if, you know, Prey were to be an Xbox exclusive coming to, you know, and they just dodged the PlayStation market entirely, then I'd like definitely jump onto that. Because I'd follow that one around, for instance.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's something we want to talk about next week, or at least on our next podcast, is going, you know, strategically, as we exit this generation and go into the new generation, what are some of the decision points? I know some people will be eyeing out, this is the opportunity to finally get current gen. You know, they might go, hey, you know, you've got a new generation coming. You've got what we know, backwards compatibility for a long time, and that both groups are going to support the Xbox current generation and the PlayStation current generation. Now might be a great time to jump in. Are you going to look to sell your PlayStation 4, your Xbox One on second hand? Are you going to try and keep the games? Are you going to put everything onto a hard drive and just transfer? I think these are a lot of the different options we want to talk about next week. So if you have any particular questions you'd like us to answer, please just drop us a message on Twitter. You can just DM us or send us a tweet on @guru_podcast. Otherwise, myself @TheGarethWoods or Tim @TimAndAFish. Happy to take in some of your insights, maybe chat about, answer some of your questions you might have about how you are navigating the transfer to the next generation, what you're looking forward to, and maybe some of the financial decisions that go around that. But as always, it's been great diving into the depths of some of the gaming's, I suppose, more topical questions. And so the Bethesda buyout, and as we posture towards the new generation of consoles, is definitely an exciting time to be a gamer. But as always, have fun and go play some games.